This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network, and you're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution Free Radio. Joining us this morning is Luann Fatora, a long-time West Virginia family person. Her history goes way back several generations. She has brought forward some information. It's on the internet, information about how that Buckeye Creek in West Virginia, in Doddridge County, West Virginia, has been contaminated with the shale gas fracturing fluid. Good morning, Luann.
Hi.
Let's just get started with the most important stuff. Tell us about yourself, your history there in West Virginia.
Okay. I grew up in north central West Virginia in Doddridge County. My family goes back five generations in that area. My great-great-grandfather was a stonemason, and he built a lot of the bridges for the B&O Railroad going across West Virginia, particularly the big bridge that crosses the Ohio River at Parkersburg. My family goes back, quite a ways, and fortunately, this place is still in our family together. And this has always been a very special place. People have places in their heart of hearts where they find sanctuary and peace, like spiritual places. And
right.
Lots of times it's a place where there's water. My pastor's mentioned this in sermons, referring to this as going back to your well in order to renew your spirit. So, I grew up and got married and moved away, but we still have our family home to go back to there in West Virginia. So, I kind of come and go a good bit. I have three sons, and I wanted to bring my children up also to experience this history.
Right. And then the Buckeye Creek that has been contaminated, is that near the family home?
Yeah. That runs through our family property. It was always a beautiful place when I was growing up. We used to have a big swimming hole, and there was, every Sunday, there was always a group of people having their baptisms there in the creek. And my sisters and I would kind of like hide behind the barn there, and we'd watch them, and we'd listen to them singing on the banks and watching the people get baptized. It was just a really neat thing to see and experience growing up.
It sounds like something, super, extra special. I have creeks and rivers in my history, but, truly what you're saying seems more spiritual than anything that, that I have with that. And so it's just, this is quite, a special creek.
Right.
And this is, tell us more about what's happened to Buckeye Creek.
Well, what happened was last summer, on August 24th, my oldest son was going to go to college, and we have a place here in West Virginia, more in the southern part of the state, where we come every summer. He was accepted into Oberlin Music Conservatory in Ohio. He's a violinist, and he's also a wonderful fiddler, Appalachian-style fiddler, but he became more of a classical violinist. He was the principal violinist, concertmaster for the Colorado Youth Symphony Orchestra, where we live during the winter and during the school year, and he was accepted into this college. So we decided that from West Virginia, at the end of the summer, we would just go from here to Oberlin, Ohio, and we would stop at the family home, spend the night there, because, it was kind of halfway there. So it would be just a nice little break. So we went up there the night of August 24th, and my kids always grew up fishing. Their favorite memories are fishing in the creek there. We also have a place here on the Greenbrier River in West Virginia. That was always a special place. It had big bass in it, muskie. My kids always dream about catching muskie and seeing them in the water. So he went down that night, August 24th, about 9 o'clock, and I was kind of getting ready to get on the phone to talk to a friend of mine, catch up on stuff, and he came back up to the house and said, "Mom, there's a problem down there. There's this red stuff all over the water." And I'm like, "Well, now what?" By then it was getting dark, so, we found some flashlights and went down there, and you could smell, the air. It, sometimes the wind kind of changes, and it was flowing across the creek, and the house is up on a knoll above the creek, and you could just smell something in the air, and it was just smell bad, you know, industrial kind of. So we went down to the creek, and we're just stupefied. I mean, we were just dumbfounded. There was just this red-orange gel caught up in trees, and the creek typically... there will be trees that fall down, and they'll crisscross the stream, and they'll capture. They captured this contaminant, and it was a couple inches thick.
Wow.
We went back up. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, didn't know what to think. We thought maybe a line had ruptured somewhere, and there had been like an old gas line thing kind of down through the creek, and my son thought, well. Did that break from the trees and spill oil out again? So the next morning, you know, I waited till dawn, till light came. It was like 5:30 in the morning, and I got up, went down, and that's, you know, I've got several pictures, you know, that I took of it, and that's how we found it. It backed up around the bend of the creek. And again, we didn't know how extensive it was at the time. So this day, I had planned to take my son to college. So, you know, we got ready to go. I kind of waited till maybe 8 o'clock to call somebody. I had to get on the Internet and look up the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection numbers.
Yep, yep.
Called them. Didn't get anybody right away, left messages, and the guy, inspector for that particular area, Doddridge and Wetzel County, I believe, called me back. He was in Clarksburg, which is nearby, maybe about 20 miles away, and he said he was on his way.
Good.
And I said, call me. I want to know what this is. What
right.
is this?
Yeah.
He called me back later during the day when... you know, my son and I were kind of like going through the registration process. You know, typically this is a fun thing.
Quite a day, huh?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a fun, it's something you look forward to all your life. And here I am. I had got the stuff on my hands and I kept smelling it. And my son was kind of laughing at me like, Mom, you know, come on, let it go. And I'm like, no, because I can't, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
I got on me. I spent the night there in Oberlin. And went back the next day to check and see what was going on. And the guy, the DEP inspector, did call me back, and he said he couldn't find it actually at first. And he was looking around. He's like, you know, I'm at this point. Where do I go from here? And I'm like, you know, go downstream, keep going. And he was talking to me as he came upon it. He's like, okay,
that's good.
I see it. So he told me that it affected about a 3-mile stretch, and that, you know, he was calling in, you know, people to clean it up. That's as far as I got pretty much the first day. The next day I go back to my home, and there's trucks down there, down the creek. There's a tanker down there. And they have suctioned up a lot of the red gel stuff that had a very bad odor to it. You know, it's very acrid,
yep.
Oil. And
right.
there were guys in the creek in the water, and they had it all over them, though.
Wow.
And I was shocked. I said, is it okay for you to be in this? And the guys were like, oh, it's just oil.
Yeah, just oil. Wow.
Yeah.
Oil.
Like,
oh, yeah. What do you mean? Can't be reasonable to get that on your body, and yet people do it. They're just crazy, I guess. I don't know. It's amazing that even with, you know, the government, kind of environmental conservation, environmental protection people, some of them, you know, they just don't, you know, even have the right training or knowledge to be careful about some of these things. And, well...
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, and I got the impression from the guys there the first day that were doing the cleanup, that they didn't really know why they were there. They were just kind of like, well, we were just told to come down here, you know, and get on this and clean it up. And the tanker truck, you know, it was from a drilling company. And I'm like, where'd this come from? And like, we don't know.
Right.
I don't know. And I'm like, where did this come from? I mean,
where did it come from?
You know, everybody, you know, I kept asking, what is this? You know, where did it come from? You know, to this day they won't tell me.
They won't tell you to this day?
They don't tell me to this day where this came from, no.
So nobody, but nobody has yet tracked down where the actual, you know, waste disposal pit, you know, pool was that got breached and got in the creek. They haven't figured that out yet?
There is one big pond upstream from me.
Yep.
Now, they were all over it, looking at it. Apparently, at one time, there was like 5 DEP guys up there looking at it.
Huh.
To this day, they still will not say how it got out of that pit,
how
that happened. And I guess this has become the big issue.
That's weird.
Feel like this is pretty disrespectful to people who live downstream. I mean, do they just presume that everybody downstream is poor from them or uneducated or, you know, they're afraid and that they'll look the other way? You know,
yeah.
It was, I think it's just very disrespectful.
Horrible. Well, tell me, I guess there's two scenarios here. The one is that somehow, you know, that pond, and see, will they allow you, have they allowed any citizens to, you know, observe, you know, look at that pond?
That pond lays just a few feet. You know, maybe, I'm not sure exactly, but it's very close to the creek bed. That thing, if you can see it plainly from Route 50, which goes, if you're going eastbound on Route 50 toward Clarksburg, all you have to do is look over the edge of the highway, and that thing is laying right there.
Huh.
And not only that, the North Bend Rail Trail goes right beside of that thing. People can look at that all the time.
But you just can't see it clearly enough to see where there's like maybe like a gully or something, you know, a break in the perimeter that would lead down to the creek?
At the time, there was a lot of bulldozing going on around that area. And it's all been disturbed. It was being disturbed at the time that this was discovered.
They must have just done something to break it.
It's just all been kind of redone over this period of time. But yet, no one will say what has happened.
They won't see what happened. And they know. It's impossible they wouldn't know. You know, how much, what do they estimate the quantity of the release?
It was, according to the West Virginia DEP report from the inspector, he said 50 to 70 barrels of the contaminant was taken out. Now, that doesn't include the...
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't include the chloride and the total dissolved salts, what is that, TDS or whatever that is. That's in the creek. I mean, that's been confirmed that that's in the creek, but that can't be taken out of the creek. But the solid, I think, the orange gel, and this apparently was trapped in other places, too. So 60 barrels is, what, 2,500 gallons. And this is kind of the thing that is kind of spurring the outrage, I think. Not necessarily me, because I have found just a lot of since this happened. And again, I said I'm flying by the seat of my pants on this stuff. I know nothing about this, but people have been very, very supportive of me and helping me figure out, you know, where do I go? I mean, what do I need to do to look up? Give me information. And,
yeah.
And the Surface Owners Rights Organization in West Virginia has been very, very helpful to me. Another woman, Beth Little, with the West Virginia Sierra Club, has been just enormous emotional support over this, because it's very distressing. Like you say, you know, you feel like it's kind of demeaning to have people just assume that you're just going to roll over and look the other way. But I'm not going to do that.
Well, fantastic. You know, and, you know, I can...
How do
we ever get to this stage, you know?
How do you lose 2,500 gallons of toxic waste and you stand there and scratch your head and it's okay to say, well, we don't know. We just don't know.
They've learned how to lie really kind of, you know, efficiently. You know, I guess the other scenario, another possible scenario, you know, just for the, you know, the purpose of, you know, being broad-minded about this and trying to, like, be the best of all human beings we can possibly be in this, is there the possibility that, you know, somebody with a truckload, you know, a tanker load of that stuff could have just dumped it in the river to get in this creek to get rid of it, you know, rather than coming out of that pond?
It's certainly a scenario, but I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. Somebody, yeah.
Somebody knows.
Yep, somebody knows.
Again, I think it's disrespect to the public. It's disrespect to neighboring people. It,
well, what's your plan for forcing them to, you know, tell you everything they know, you know?
I went ahead and paid out of my pocket to have an independent testing done of the water.
Yep.
And unfortunately, by the time, you know, we decided to do this, it was about 9 days after we discovered
yeah.
this. Now,
yeah.
I have no doubt that that sat there a while. That didn't just happen. Okay.
You bet.
The area where we discovered this is on a secluded area of the creek, which is kind of back and around a bend behind my house. And nobody goes there, hardly.
Right.
My sister is living there, but she works a lot. She doesn't go down the creek all the time, you know, kind of sporadically. But that had been there a while. You could see orange marks on the sides of the bank in the soil going down to the water level. The water had been higher. I had been there about the 1st of August, and the water was running a little high then. There had been some rain. The water was muddy, and that's very typical. What's also very typical of this area is that the banks are very sandy and soil, and the soil crumbles and all. So when I saw that water pit up above us, I was just absolutely dumbfounded to see something like that that had been allowed to be placed so close to the creek bank. Because every time the water rises and falls, banks shift. They shift, they crumble. And it was just a surprise to me. And again, I'm a novice at this.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know anything.
So you may have said this already, but I want to just, you know, emphasize it. How close is that? That hazardous waste or that toxic waste disposal pit, how close is that to the creek?
I just can't say because you can see it from above. My guess is maybe it's only a guess, 20 feet.
Well, that's, you know, that's horrible. You know, it's just, like you say, how dare they do that and then not tell people about the bad results that come about when that, you know, it's probably illegal to, maybe, hopefully it's illegal to even have put it there in the first place.
I don't think so. That the laws are so lax that that my guess is that all this stuff started happening in the last few years with this type of drilling. My guess is that there's not been any kind of law or provision for this because it just kind of raced forward without anybody taking a step back and looking at it and saying, okay, you know, here's the dangers, here's what we need to do. You know, it has to be, they want it close to the creek because they were taking water out of the creek in order to fill it, in order to drill the Marcellus well. They need the water to do that. So, unfortunately, I think this creek has suffered because of that, because it's extremely low. It's extremely low right now. And when you put on top of the fact that there's been a real lack of rain, This stuff is still sitting there. This chloride and the TDS is still sitting in that water because there has not been sufficient rain to move that water. And I was there yesterday and the day before. I took a walk with my nephew. We're checking on things. We couldn't see a single fish. Typically, you see fish, you know, rising to the top and all. And we actually did at first when we first discovered that. But we couldn't find anything. There were a few small minnows, and it seemed like, you know, when I first met the inspectors on the site, maybe it was about a week after we had reported this and all, the first thing they tell me is that there's not been a fish kill. And I was like, that's great. That's good for now. Of course, we know that there's not a fish kill. And then when I always have these questions, I'm like, what happened? We don't know, you know, and I keep asking them, and the guys are like, well, it was an accident, and it's just being cleaned up. I'm like, well, but you said you don't know what happened. How do you know it's an accident if you don't know what happened? And I also had one of the inspectors in front of another inspector, and me and my nephew turned to me and said, we've got boys dying overseas because of our dependence on foreign oil, you know.
That's not an excuse.
That dumbfounded me. And I actually mentioned that to the supervisor, James Martin, in Charleston. And, you know, and they don't seem to think that that's a big deal. And I think that's a big deal because that tells me that this investigator is not investigating this. That it's
exactly.
Kind of a... Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want to investigate it because it would make them look bad, the final result of the investigation, because something's wrong with how they're dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
It goes much higher than West Virginia. I know people, the way I got interested, see, we decided, our group is Cancer Action New York and Cancer Action Network. We just decided, okay, we're going to be a Stop Tar Sands organization. Once I've been out in Saskatchewan this last winter and started learning about, tar sands activity out there in Western Canada. And then I go down and visit my friends, the McManus family, down in the Ithaca, Tompkins County part of New York State, where this marsh, Sellers Shale exists.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in this group called Shale Shock, and they're fighting this expansion of the gas drilling, the Marcellus Shale gas drilling, into the state of New York. They're fighting that, and so I decided, okay, when I got together with them, I decided, okay, our group's also going to be this Stop Shale Gas organization, and it's all about, with the shale gas in particular, it's all about how, not poorly, horribly set up the legal kind of aspects of this are, because it's my understanding, and I'm no expert on this because I'm just jumping into it, so to speak, but it's my understanding, based upon what has been shared with me by these people in this Shale Shock organization, that there are exemptions. The oil, I think it's oil and gas, but I'm certain it's gas. Let's just leave it at gas for the moment. The gas exploitation industry is exempt from the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of what the problem is here.
Yeah, it is part of the problem, and I've learned that also. Apparently, Dick Cheney got this exempted during the Bush administration because of his association with Halliburton, that he pushed this through and got it exempted, which is it's just a terrible heritage now from that administration.
Yeah, paying the price right there in your home, mm-hmm. homeland, paying the price for what Bush and Cheney did to America
mm-hmm.
back all those years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Is Obama going to fix this?
I don't know. I sent him a letter.
Cool. Wonderful. Everybody should send him letters about our various, here's my big, issue. And that I was trying to deal with, before shale gas ever came along, because I have my issues. We are our group is all about preventing pollution that causes cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dealing with this issue that's right here where we live. You have your shale gas drilling problem there in the homeland. Well, in my homeland, one of the big problems has been this burning of trash. Lots of people burning trash
right.
and poisoning the air that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horrible problem here in particular because this is a large dairy farming
mm-hmm.
region. It's northern New York State. We're not in New York City. We're up on the Canadian border. It's this huge millions and millions of pounds of milk being produced up here.
Oh.
So we've been trying to get government to do the right thing just on something as dumb and backward as this open waste burning.
Yeah.
It took us since 1997 to get a piece of, and it's not even a law, to get a regulation that would ban open waste burning in New York State. You think of like New York. Wow. Like there's the leading state, if there is one. And yet, 97 to 2009 to get a ban on open waste burning?
Mm-hmm.
Like, government.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for that at all. That's just like slow motion, which government has a problem with. There's probably no reason at all why, there's no big industry that's got any money in that,
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of big industries that got money in, gas drilling.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the solution?
Well, I didn't know really what to do. I sent a letter to Governor Manchin. I sent letters to Senators Rockefeller, Senator Byrd, and Congressman Mullahan, and President Obama. President Obama, he's got his hands full, so I really don't expect him to, personally answer me.
Yeah.
But I did get an answer from everybody else. I got a note back from the governor, and he did say that he contacted West Virginia DEP and said that they were to get me a report, and he wanted a copy also. I think I was mentioning that I had hired the a water monitoring company, and
yep.
they had to make a Freedom of Information Act request with the West Virginia DEP to answer their questions.
Great.
They got some of their questions answered, but a lot of their questions were not answered. So they made a second Freedom of Information Act request to answer the questions. And I think the West Virginia DEP seems to just basically want us to go away and quit asking questions because they just keep saying they don't know what happened. And to me, that's just not acceptable. I really expect when something like this happens, you know, I have three children, and I try to teach them to stand up, you know, when they make a mistake, and just stand up and acknowledge it, because they can move on quicker if you know, they try to hide a mistake. It's something that just kind of grows and festers. So what I expect when something like this happens is for the company or the drilling company to step up and say, here's what happened. We're sorry. We're cleaning this up right now, and not only that, we'll adopt this watershed and keep it monitored on an ongoing basis, or something, you know, to that effect. That's what I expect. That's what I'm raising my children to do. And they don't seem to understand that this air of secrecy and cover-up, this is just going to fester for them.
Yeah, I have this vibe. I get this sense, you know, that things are not going to go kind of like as the business as usual, you know, taught people to expect things to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just like this new energy on the earth. Many, many people just kind of finding that this is a time when their love of the earth is going to, you know, just really empower them
mm-hmm.
to get a good result, you know, a good spirited and, like you're talking, this reasonable human behavior, this good human behavior kind of result, rather than this bad stuff, you know.
Yeah, I just don't get it. You know, why not just step up and say, this happened, this was a mistake, we're taking care of it. But basically, the word I got right away was, well, the company was volunteering to do the cleanup, you know, to want to save the taxpayers. And I'm like, excuse me? What?
Yeah,
what
yeah, exactly.
They're volunteering to clean this up.
Yeah, you know, what are the criterion for the cleanup? You know, when they do it, they probably don't have any, there's no criteria at all.
Well, that's been another big problem that I have been seeing, because I've been keeping a close eye on this. I've actually been flying in and out of West Virginia and Colorado to just keep an eye on what the heck's going on. Because, you know, this is kind of adding up, you know, expense-wise.
Yeah, but
it's worth it, because I'm not an extravagant person personally. You know, I don't, you know, ask for lots of things in my personal life that are, that cost a lot of money, you know.
Yep.
This is what, you know, this is, I guess this was meant to be.
It's important. And, you know, you're growing as an environmental activist. What, were you an environmental activist before this happened?
Well, I wasn't an activist. I was a supporter, you know.
Yep.
I always support an organization.
Yep.
The Greenbrier River Watershed Association, Audubon. I'm a licensed wildlife rehabilitator in Colorado.
Oh, that's cool.
I have always had a very special relationship with the natural world. It's like I can read things in an environment. And before this happened, I was there at my family home with my youngest son, and he wanted to go fishing. And my third sibling just passed away from cancer a year ago. And she had lived there. So our family home is kind of in a state of flux right now. And he was kind of sad about going up there because his Aunt Terry was gone now. And I said, well, let's go up and down the creek, you know. We'll just go fishing and we'll explore. And that's just always fun, you know. You find claw crabs and snakes and things. And I saw a few things there. You know, I saw a dead muskrat. I saw a sick-looking raccoon. And these things may have nothing to do with this, but something was telling me, pay attention here. And I kind of turned from it, because it's always easier to turn away from things, you know, rather than confront them.
Yep.
And I initially just kind of wanted to just turn away and not delve into anything. But again, you know, that sense kept coming back to me, like, pay attention, ask questions. And I was talking to my nephew, who had spent more time there fishing and all, and he started telling me how, you know, he just wasn't seeing things like as numerous fish. They don't see craw crabs anymore. They don't see mussels in the creek anymore like they used to. And you know, you just, all these things kept coming at me saying, pay attention. Put these things together. And over a period of time, and then, boom, August 24th, I go up there, and I walk down there, and I'm the one who sees this. I have to wonder if my son hadn't chosen to go fishing that night, if that would still be sitting there.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. You know,
you have
just
to wonder.
When people, when we're so, you know, there's this whole thing that's also playing out here of our disconnectedness from the earth. You know, we're just run around so much and so busy with other things, and life is so demanding, and there's so much stress and stuff. And
yeah,
you know, thank God that there is still that thread of the need to get back to it, and that your son felt it and went down there. And boy, how many of these kind of things do just get missed because of our kind of like isolation from the Earth Mother and all these things?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Since I've kind of gotten connected with this, I've had people call me from different states. I had a lady call me last Sunday, a week ago, from Colorado, where, like I said, we go there, you know, for the school year. That's where we chose to have our children in school, and my husband works there. She called me about the situation they have in western Colorado, and I had just only gotten, you know, just little bits and pieces from her, or not from her, but previously about this gas shale drilling going on over there and contaminating water and wells blowing up and stuff like that.
Wow.
And it's really amazing. And this lady talked to me, and she was telling me the same words that she was getting a sense.
Hmm.
Pay attention. And I'm like, it's the exact same scenario. It's like, you know, certain people, I guess, have a connectedness.
Yeah.
And I guess we're the ones who have to be the watchdogs, because, you know, people who do the drilling, all they care about is money. You
yeah.
know, it's money.
Yep.
You know, the almighty dollar to them is the priority. It rules their lives. Other people, it doesn't.
There has to be some way. And you know, there are so many questions that just keep coming up as we kind of live this life and are trying to deal with these things. How can it be changed that the people that feel like you do have the power to respond and to watch? Even you don't, like you're saying, it's hard for you to watch that place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, isn't it amazing how far we are from what, you know, what we need to have is what you're talking about being able to do everywhere, and what we have is so far from that. And there's so much kind of polluting stuff going on that is putting all that at risk. Sometimes I really wonder how, you know, good this is going to turn out, you know, when we've just gone so far with this greed.
Yeah, I think we've got to get more laws changed. The laws have got to be reversed. The Safe Drinking Water Act, that has got to be, that's got to be revisited quickly here. There needs to be more oversight in the Department of Environmental Protection, whatever state it is. I think that these guys are so run ragged, from what I understand. Now, with what was happening in the last few years with this Marcellus well drilling, so much was happening, so many permits were being issued. They can't do their job, I think, is my opinion, because they need more people. This
yeah.
takes diligence.
A lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this particular pond upstream from me, they have two more permits already ready to drill again there. One was drilled. There's two more on that property.
And so that when they drill this, see, I don't know as much about this as you do. When they do that drilling, they put all the waste from the drilling activity in that pond?
Well, and again, like, I don't know exactly what happens. I've never seen it actually happen. I know that on the Internet there are some videos you can see. From what I understand from reading up on it, is that a lot of the water that is millions of gallons of water is mixed with sand and chemicals. Some of it comes back up, and they capture it They have to capture it because it is, you know, thought to be toxic. They can't just put it, let it run into the ground or the stream. So they capture it, and I believe that they can reuse that same water. And they will, and that is the impression I've gotten with this particular pond, is that they're going to reuse that water once or maybe twice more before then they dispose of it for good somewhere.
Okay, that's, well, that's kind of raising more questions with me, because the people that I talked to down in the central New York area, in this Finger Lakes region of New York, they were saying, or like somewhere I read on the internet or like somewhere about this gas drilling, that you had to have pretty much clean water and stuff to, you know, make the chemicals work the way they're supposed to when they're injected down into the earth there to get the gas out more effectively. So, you know, there are all of these questions, and, wow.
I don't know. Ooh. I've heard that before. I've heard it was just, you know, water. Water and sand, they could take it out of sand.
No, they mix a bunch of... You want to get in touch with Dr. Theo Colburn. Dr. Colburn is a endocrinologist and, she's like the top gun in the whole world, really, on endocrine disruption and pollution that causes that.
Uh-huh.
And she got together, somehow she obtained the chemical kind of the chemical content, you know, the ingredients, so to speak, of this fracturing fluid that they use to get the gas out.
Uh-huh.
Her phone is 970-527-6548.
Uh-huh.
That's her home, and she's out in Colorado. It's kind of cool, you know. She's out in Colorado where you guys are at.
Oh, really?
Yep. Huh. And then her other number is her. It's the same stuff except for the last four, you know. Her work number is 4082.
Uh-huh.
So it's called TEDx. It's called the Endocrine Disruption Exchange. You know, she's doing these national laws. She's doing these. She's actually going to have this law. She's working with one of the the Congress people right now. They're just about ready to roll out this law called the Endocrine Disruption Prevention Act.
Uh-huh.
And surely, you know, see these chemicals that they use in the fracturing, they're endocrine disruptors.
Yeah, and you know, they don't have to reveal, though. They don't have to exactly reveal what they're using. Okay?
I know, but somehow Dr. Colburn has got some traction on that. They do have some information on what is in the cocktail that they're pumping down the ground there.
Well, good for her.
And if you want to email her, it's just C-O-L-B-O-R-N, Colburn, at TDSTDS.net.
All right.
Yep. And she's wonderful, you know. She's eye color and talked to her. She's actually given us an interview. One of our earlier interviews was where we started up this Endocrine Disruptors series, and she's the lead story on that. Because, see, what we're finding is that there's a real powerful, you know, a terrible connection between the endocrine disruptors and cancer. You see like dioxins and the PBDEs, and also the bisphenol A. Truly, probably the best science on connections between endocrine disrupting chemicals and cancer is what has been seen on the bisphenol A and on dioxins.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what happens is when there's in utero and lactational exposure, the offspring is predisposed to develop various types of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the case with dioxins. It is that the female offspring, and these are animal studies, but they're very window-opening animal studies.
Yeah.
These female offspring are predisposed to develop breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
And that's why we think that we see young girls now getting breast cancer. There's a 10-year-old in California that has breast cancer.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And there are, we look at the cancer data here in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
The New York State Department of Health has a cancer registry, the New York State Cancer Registry.
Mm-hmm.
They revealed to us, and this is, you know, it wasn't that they were hiding it. It was just that we hadn't looked closely enough, you know, and we're just talking to them, and they're talking to us, and, you know, they said, well, look at this. And they provided us with this, you know, a little closer look at all this huge volume of data. You know, and it's clear, based upon, you know, what's sitting right there on this page on the Internet, that in the time period 2002 to 2006, it's a five-year time period, in those 5 years, 2002 to 2006, 12 girls in New York State were diagnosed with breast cancer between the ages of 15 and 19. You know, just unbelievable.
Yeah. That shouldn't be.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. It didn't used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Something is wrong, and we believe that these animal studies are, you know, a clear indicator of what is actually taking place mm-hmm. in human beings, and that it is indeed exposure
yeah.
to these chemicals that cause this in rats that's causing it in people.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. You know, it's just not normal, you know, to be contaminating our environment like this. And, you know, it's unfortunately, you know, unfortunate. We just hear more and more people having cancer and illnesses. And, you know, it is very difficult to tie in, you know, these things all together and say, well, okay, this causes cancer. You know, it's such a complex issue.
You know, what we have done is said, okay, we're going to back up here a minute. We have this, there's this thing called the National Toxicology Program, mm. and they produce this thing called the Report on Carcinogens, and it lists known human carcinogens mm. and suspected human carcinogens. We yeah. said, wait a minute. Of course, right now, we don't know what caused an individual person's case of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the closest you could ever get is if somebody was, like, really super acute exposed to something that was known to cause cancer.
Right.
Then you could pretty much say, okay, that caused it. But for these general cancers, and there's so many of them, that's the whole problem. There's many more of these general cancers,
yeah.
these, you know, these that you can't say what caused the cancers.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a huge amount of information that we can apply to that.
Yeah.
Risk assessments have been done for certain chemicals, like
yeah.
dioxins in particular.
Right.
That risk assessment, you know, clearly states in U.S. EPA's draft dioxin reassessment, there's about a 1 in 1,000 excess cancer risk for
mm-hmm.
dioxin exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, the problem with that is it doesn't take into account this predisposing effect of dioxins. That only looks at the epidemiology that was with adults getting exposed to dioxin manufacturing pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
So truly, there's no doubt the exposure, you know, the risk imposed by the amount of exposure that occurs here in the U.S. is greater than 1 in 1,000.
Yeah.
But even if it's 1 in 1,000, think about it. That's just dioxin. You put together all of the other known
yeah.
human carcinogens in animal fat foods that we're consuming regularly, it doesn't surprise me that we've got a lot of breast cancer and colorectal cancer and these fat consumption-associated cancers.
Yeah.
And yet we can't get government. You're trying to get government to do something. We've been trying to get government since 2003 at the very most recent, and probably before that, actually, if I really carefully look back in our records, we've been trying to get government to tell the public simply that dioxins are present in animal fat foods, that
yeah.
there's significant cancer risk associated, and that people should stop consuming those foods to any extent whatsoever.
Yeah.
They won't do it. They won't do it. New York State Department won't do. Department of Health won't do it.
Yeah.
EPA won't do it. You know, CDC won't do it.
Uh-huh.
They won't do it.
Yeah.
So good luck. You know, I'm not trying to. You know, if I'm disheartening you because you got such a beautiful heart, and you care about this so much, I'm sure you're going to get some good traction on it. One thing I would suggest. If you want to do it, we'd love to have you. See, we're building this Cancer Action Network programming. We want to be the biggest in the world source of, you know, scientific-based, heartfelt knowledge on pollution-causing cancer.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to be one of our reporters, we welcome you into the Cancer Action Network. And it's easy. I could have you reporting for us in, like, 5 minutes.
So, yeah, you know, just tell me what you...
Okay, I'll email you. I'll email you about like a 100-worder that'll describe what you need to do to do it.
Okay.
That sounds cool. Okay.
Well, like I said, I never considered myself an activist before.
Well, you are. You are. Your heart's an activist heart. I can taste it.
Atlanta, and I said, you know, I always kind of, you know, was always the one who supported everybody, you know, else, you know, emotionally and all, and you know, cheered everybody else on, but then it landed in my backyard.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's what happens. I wasn't an activist before. I just kept getting beat up by all these horrible kind of problems that came along. There was a countywide, our county wanted to burn all the trash. The whole county is a big county. They wanted to burn all that trash, like, just right. Our farm was near the high-impact area. That's what happens. That's how it always turns out. The people that are called, you know, the people that get into it are the ones that just happened. It
yeah.
didn't just happen once. There was a hazardous waste site, a great big, super fun hazardous waste site a couple miles away.
Wow.
And then there was a chipboard factory, this OSB mill, that
yeah.
wanted to do its thing, like, within, I could have seen the smokestack. They just kept doing it to our home farm. So
well,
I just kept fighting.
You know, back to, you know, being just kind of dragged into this, I'm not anti natural gas or anything. I'm anti stupidity, and I'm anti cover ups, and I'm anti pollution. I'm not against the natural gas industry itself at all. It's just, come on, you know. Treat everybody with respect and acknowledge your mistakes and all. I don't know.
Well, thank the Earth Mother and the good spirits. You know, there's people, and there are more and more of them. There are more and more people like you. There's me, there's you. I know this guy by the name of MacDonald Stainsby. It's out in Western Canada. That's just, he's just on fire to fight these tar sands. They're just so horrible. You talk about that pond that you're talking about. Imagine this. On the Athabasca River in Alberta, the province of Alberta, about halfway north, this river that drains into the Arctic Ocean through the Mackenzie River, this one of the greatest water systems of the world. You know, Buckeye Creek is really, really super important, but that Athabasca River and the Mackenzie River and the Arctic Ocean are super important too.
Oh, yeah.
And they did it there, Luann. The oil companies put these huge, they call them tailings ponds. They put these huge ponds on the riverbank, and they're just made of dirt. You know, there's no. I've not heard anything that holds in. I haven't heard you say anything about the containment that actually holds in that horrible, toxic brew in that pond down there in West Virginia. Well, there's nothing that's holding it in up there in Alberta either.
Uh-huh.
It's contaminated the Athabasca River. The little village of Fort Chipewyan, downstream from these horrible ponds, has high cancer rates, 30% over the average for, you know, all cancers. And the problem is they should be way below the average living in that pristine place.
Uh-huh.
They have a rare cancer called In my excitement, I'm missing the correct name. It's this bile duct cancer, this really rare cholangiosarcoma, I think it's called, but maybe that's not right, but I'm too excited. The rare cancer, this bile duct cancer, it's very not rare there, and it's because of those PAHs and all these toxic chemicals that are in the water that were never there before, except maybe in, like, absolutely truly minute quantities from natural sources. They're there now because of tar sands, and They won't admit it. They're just saying, oh no.
Oh, you can't prove that.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, the pond, they claim that the dam that holds in one of these ponds is the biggest dam on Earth.
Wow.
This tar sands activity, the strip mine, you know what strip mining is, being from West Virginia.
Yeah.
Well, they're strip mining the tar sands in Alberta, but the tar sands are so much more bottom of the barrel than coal. It's a strip mine. They're going to strip mine a place the size of Florida. That's the plan.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Huh.
And that's why we're stopped tar sands to the hilt. You got to be stopped. Well, it's just wonderful having met you. You know,
you.
Hurrah for the internet and honor to Luann Fartura. You know.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Well, we wanted, you know, you were a potential, you know, help. And see, we're not going to have a good radio program and a good, network if we don't have good people. You know, that's the way it's always done. You know, it's only about good people. And, you know, this MacDonald Stainsby, he's willing to be a reporter, and it sounds like you may well be. And, you know, I've got this friend, I've got an 83-year-old that's doing some of the reporting, and
he's
only got one leg. So
okay.
It's kind of cool. It's the coolest cancer action network there was.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good.
Well,
okay.
Thanks a lot. You've given us the longest interview yet. This is just almost an hour interview.
Oh,
someday we're going to do like a 10-hour one to kind of like really change this whole thing.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot for laughing with me.
You're welcome.
Yep, bye.
Yeah, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.